I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Palm Theater, home of the Slow Film Festival in downtown San Luis Obispo, California. Come along and join me for a most insightful conversation with Guy Mossman, videographer and co-producer of a most powerful, memorable, and poignant documentary, Speak. The documentary follows five high school students as they prepare to compete in the Super Bowl of high school public speaking events hosted by the National Speech and Debate Association. Guy Mossman.
My name's Guy Mossman. I'm the co-director of the film Speak.
So you have to speak now.
That's right. I'm going to try my best.
So the film is all about public speaking. Was it mostly like high school age kids?
Exactly. They are starting programs in elementary and middle school now, all around the country. But our film focused on the high school age kids. We had four seniors and one junior.
And what made it happen? You know, what was that epiphanous moment when you said, ooh, let's do a documentary about this?
Well, I think that most documentary filmmakers, they're either moved by a person or they're moved by a sort of a yearning to say something from deep inside about the world they live in. I discovered this world in 2019.
How did you discover it?
My niece was very close to a group of friends from this world. So I met them and they told me all about it. And I am embarrassed to say I didn't know much about it. I'm embarrassed because there's almost 140,000 kids registered this academic sport nationwide.
It's a broad net of public speaking, is that?
The world is commonly known as speech and debate. We mostly associate debate with this world. And so we wanted to tell a story and put on the screen this world of speaking because it's even more popular. There are probably, you know, two or three times more participants in the speaking side. There are many different events. So there are different things they're doing. But the event we chose was called Original Oratory. So what they're doing is they're writing a piece from the ground up. It's 10 minutes long. They have to memorize the piece, and throughout the entire year, they're competing. And while they're competing, they're getting feedback, they're getting judged, they're winning, they're losing in regional and local competitions, and they are rewriting their piece based on the feedback they're getting. So it evolves. Uh-huh. And so we realize that the piece itself is in some way a character in and of itself that really reflects the very personal story that each of these competitors is going through in their personal lives.
So one of the ways to take something that's a static process, standing on a stage, you know, speaking, you as a videographer, you have to find creative ways to make it dynamic, to make it fluid, to draw the viewer in. How did you brainstorm that?
So what drew me to this story, first of all, is the message that these kids are all sending to the world.
What resonated with you? What hooked you? They were doing?
Well, I've always been personally interested in stories about young people, but the very fact that these young people are sort of peeling back the layers of the onion and they are telling us things and showing us things about the world we live in, our own blind spots. If we as adults want to listen to them, we have a lot to learn. So I wanted to make a film that, in a sense, is positioned, is crafted for adults as well, that forces us to realize and kind of look in the mirror, okay, we can do better. And especially those that are in elected office in the public domain. And these kids are the next major influencers and political figures. They're courageous, they're outspoken, they're reflective, they're sentient, and they're just normal teenagers at the same time.
Again, how do you turn that lens? Because the kids, you know, are just doing their thing.
Okay, so I think Jen Teixeira, my directing partner, we knew that the piece itself was really important, but we also knew that unlike other competition documentaries that really focus on the world of the competition, we really wanted to spend, you know, most of our time immersed in the lives of our kids because we wanted that to bring their speech to life through that material rather than bring it to life on stage or in the front of a classroom. We wanted to bring it to life at home as well. And by doing that, in a sense. It's a meta sort of storytelling device. But then we have an opportunity to structure the film around their journey to the national tournament. So while there is a competition structure, probably 80% of the material we've shot with them at home. And so that's one way to kind of keep it immersive and colorful and emotional and ideally, you know, cinematic mm-hmm. in the way that we portrayed these kids and the way we shot the film.
In your movie, in your uh-huh. presentation, what are some of the visual hooks, the dramatic things that just suck you in?
So each of our kids have, for Noor, for example, she is living at home in rural Texas. They just moved there and they started a speech and debate program at a very small school outside of Lubbock. Not only is she doing that with her mom, who's her coach, she is raising pigs and she is competing. Spending time with her in that world gave us an opportunity to kind of bring that to life. And she practices with her pig and it's very cute. Her story is not about raising pigs. Her story is about her brother. The heart of her story is about being a caregiver and the sort of rights and respect that she would like from the world and from the community as a caregiver of her brother who's living with Lennox-Gastaut disorder, which is a type of autism and epilepsy. So his life is limited, and so every moment he is very precious for them. She's going to school, she's going to college.
That's a lot of people. In Fort Worth, I wasn't involved in anything extracurricular. But once I moved here, I started showing pigs. I named him Dwayne because his breed is a Duroc. So it's like Dwayne Duroc Johnson. I never even touched a pig, and then I got a pig.
Good job out there. And
then I got a boyfriend.
I love you.
I love you too.
You okay?
Yeah.
Buddy, you want to listen? Do you want to be my audience? Come here.
If I had to describe myself in one word, it would be angelic and selfless. The point is I'm perfect. In fact, I never get in trouble with my parents, except for when it comes to my little brother. He can punch me, pinch me, kick me, and bite me. And my mom will tell me to toughen up, Dwayne. So I should probably include some important context. See, my brother has special needs. In fact, he's profoundly special needs. And if this plot twist has made you feel a little uncomfortable, you can relate to the both of us. Popular movie like My Sister's Keeper and required reading of Mice and Men have convinced our society that I must see my brother as a burden. It is time to expand our vision and appreciate the multiplicity of experiences for individuals with disabilities and their loved ones. Despite my lifelong flawless behavior, I can accept the fact I am not the favorite. I may be perfect, but Noah is perfecter. Why are you running? I forgot my ending.
So what are some cinematic hooks? Well, we have, for example, you know, we have the agony of defeat. We have moments where the students are, triumph and are victorious. And I won't give away the story, but two of our students, final on the national stage at the end of the year. We shot that we tried to bring that and make that very cinematic on stage. Mm-hmm. And so we shot with anamorphic lenses, primarily on primes. And so what that means is that we are, with light and lenses and natural light, we're trying to paint a very personal and intimate portrait of each student. So we go out to the fair with Noor. That's really, visual.
So you have your photographer handheld walking with them.
Exactly. We have a Steadicam or mm-hmm. the Easy Rig. You know, we go on trips with them. And with Noah, it's a very personal story with his father. So we tried to capture that relationship as it's evolving throughout the year. And he lost his mom during COVID. And so his speech is about kind of picking up the pieces. And it's about she took her own life. Obviously, that has been very traumatizing for him. So the piece is really for him is about trying to raise awareness around suicide and how to make the conversation around suicide something that benefits the community, that benefits other young people, other teens who have suicidal ideation, but can help them not to create a stigma out of it, but to try to destigmatize it and to make it more of a comfortable sort of conversation, some of the hard things that are leading to those sorts of thoughts.
My mom wrote me a note. She wrote that I believe your life will be better without me. And I don't agree with that. But I have to respect it. Because if I don't respect her final decision, then I don't respect anything she did on this earth. Even through the lens of depression and mental illness, which skewed her judgment, she ultimately was able to put my dad, my sister, and put me above herself. And like, that's the ultimate thing, isn't it?
Rolling way back in time. What was the genesis of the whole concept? How was it birthed?
Yeah. So it really did go back into COVID. I'm a cinematographer, so I generally don't have time to put projects together. So this was my first opportunity. I had been thinking about it for a while.
How did it come to you?
Well, in 2019, I just started researching. I started thinking about it in 2019. I thought it was an intriguing world. A lot of my favorite films were films about young people competing. You know, obviously Spellbound was spellbinding. I love that film. I love Mad Hot Ballroom about young kids learning to ballroom dance. So I love Mad Hot Ballroom and love seeing these young kids competing. The obvious one is Spellbound. So the idea of capturing this world of kids in a competitive format seemed like it could work. It could work thematically and structurally. But what really drew me to it was what they were saying about who we are and who we're capable of being and who we're not. What's the potential we're not living up to? Feeling in 2019 a sense of, you know, dissatisfaction with the political rhetoric, the discourse going on television and among our elected officials. I just felt like, oh God, I wish they could just see the way these kids engage in the issues, the substance. And I think that the world wants to see that we have a generation of young people who are going to restore this sort of integrity in the public office.
You use the process of a storyboard delineation to visually look at what you want to do?
I really ascribe to filmmaking style that's a little more organic. We call it a sort of verite filmmaking style. So we wanted to...
You have to see it.
We have to see
it. In your mind.
In my mind, yes. Yeah. We look at it. We see the scenes. We didn't know who we were end up casting. So this world is very, very diverse.
Delivering the conclusion to our journey is Speaker 4749, The Longest Street.
In case you missed it, earlier this year, the Today Show interviewed one of the biggest names in children's programming. That's right. They interviewed my little red bro, my favorite red fro, my gang that you know, the best in the show, with Aura and Flo. Elmo! Sesame Street's world of love and acceptance poses a stark contrast to our world today. Whether we are victims, consumers, or executors of this degradation, we live in a country with a wealth of humiliation and a poverty of dignity. Dr. D.C. Klein in the Journal of Primary Prevention calls this the humiliation dynamic.
utilizing humiliation not just as a tool of social control, but even as a weapon of war. Because when confinement, bullets, and bombs have not broken the human spirit, humiliation can. Dr. King mapped out the arc of the moral universe as long and always bending towards justice. And it is my hope that lessons from the longest street, such as empathy and respect, can reach as far as Palestine. The humiliation dynamic can only be broken when we shift out of the roles of humiliator, victim, and witness. Whenever you feel pain or anger or any other emotion that brings up the desire to demean, force yourself to step away and acknowledge the hidden core of your frustrations. To the witness, use your front row seat as an invitation to respond. The directions to get back to Sesame are simple. At the intersections of love and hurt, choose love. Take a left at understanding and acceptance, and a right at hope. And that's how you get back to Sesame Street.
We have two kids that are first-generation immigrants, and then we have Noor, who is Algerian Choctaw. We have Noah, who's Chinese-American. His mother is from China. And Sam, who's from Moorhead, up in upstate Minnesota. It's a very eclectic, very diverse world, which is another thing that I loved about this, is because young people are sitting down together, and they're learning how to discuss difficult and debate difficult topics and speak about difficult topics. They have to learn to listen. And I know that sounds trite. I know that sounds cliche. We as adults are always telling our kids, listen, why don't you listen? But to listen deeply is something else. We like to point out what Esther says in the film. We like to call attention to that this world has given her the ability to, she may not agree with what someone else is saying, but through this, it's giving you the skills to understand how they might have gotten to that place where they might think that or believe that. And that gives you a deeper sense of empathy.
Throughout the process, did you gain a new respect and hope for the future for the upcoming generations?
Absolutely. It also restored my faith in education, because there are coaches, teachers out there who are... The film is also a love letter to the teachers, I have to say. Like, I really want that. And I hope that they are honored, that we've been able to honor them. Each one of these students has an incredible coach. And they are also featured prominently in the film. So it restored my faith that there are teachers out there who are still, who are passionate and sensitive and smart and willing to help young people learn how to ask difficult questions in schools.
The teachers are literally unsung heroes.
That's right. They really are.
Spread out, please. Get to a desk and face me. Okay, shh. Let's talk about oratory. Original oratory, 10 minutes. And it's completely memorized. It's daunting. But it is my favorite event, because it gives you all the opportunity to use your voices.
My mom is not only my mom, but she's also my speech coach. She's the person I look up to. She's been a single mom my whole entire life.
So people actually stand like this.
So she had to juggle being a speech and theater teacher while having a 3-year-old and a baby. It was hard to grow our team because in Brownfield, nobody knows what speech is. So every tournament that we wanted to go to, all the food we had to eat, all the gas that we needed to go, all of it my mom paid for. It's because she saw something in us that our school didn't.
So we hope that we can sing their praise, that our film does that, I hope.
So you had your vision, you kind of formulated it. Now you have to raise big bucks. And I understand you've generated over $1 million in funding.
Yeah, the making a film is all about raising money. And so that's the less romantic side of the business. And it's not getting easier. But we were really fortunate. We had a group of a dozen amazing partners that came in at different levels to help us.
What resonated? Why did they agree to come aboard?
I think because they felt like these kids are restoring a sense of hope in our country, and that our democracy is really dependent on programs like this that are raising young people to be able to think critically, communicate ideas clearly, and to be able to listen as well, as I point out, on a very fundamental level. If those skills are not taught effectively in high school and middle school, then by the time they're in college, they may be very book smart, but what are they standing for? What do they stand for? Where is their ethical foundation?
In your process going forward, it's in the can. It's kind of the now what, right?
Right.
Distribution, yeah. Film festivals. Yeah. How's that been going?
We premiered at Sundance, which was incredible. And we've had a great festival run. We're here at San Luis Obispo, which is a wonderful festival. And we're so honored to be here.
When were you at Sundance?
Toward the end of January. Mm-hmm. And we premiered on opening night. You know, we have an exciting festival run. There's been probably 5 or 6 films that have sold out of Sundance so far. Mm-hmm. It was not an exciting, let's just put it that way. It was sort of a lackluster sales kind of environment, climate. But since then, films are cobbling together deals, and they're finding ways to make it work, and I hope we're next. We have a great sales team, and we're working on it.
What's your best hope for sales?
I don't know if we'll ever generate much money right now in this market. We'll get it out there. We'll get it up on a national platform for people. We'll hopefully get a theatrical run just so we can get critical reviews and then get it qualifying for some awards at the end of the year. It's important that this film screens internationally, so we'll have an international distributor of repute.
Where would you like to hope it goes overseas?
For sure, Europe, UK. It'd be wonderful if it went to China, to be honest. I would love that. And where else? Canada would be great. The Scandinavian countries. It's screening in Poland next month at the festival there. And we premiered at Thessaloniki in Greece, which is a great documentary festival.
So your promotional undertakings, that's in-house?
Right now, it's in-house, but as we ramp up for the fall, that we'll have a more robust PR team. But we're putting together a great impact campaign as well, which is exciting.
In the here and now, somebody's listening to you.
Yeah.
And they go, oh my God, I want to see that movie. Where do they go? How do they watch it?
Yeah, that's the big question right now. So,
well, what's your best hope as you move along?
We'll have a national platform, something in the fall or winter.
Could it be on like Netflix or?
Probably not Netflix, but another major streamer, and then broadcast. Mm-hmm. So I can't say who. So it'll be widely available. It'll be out theatrically, and hopefully we can do more than just a limited run. We'll see how audiences at this point seem to really respond and love the film. We just won a great award at Full Frame Film Festival. We're closing at Nantucket in June. We're at closing night in Nantucket, which is also a great festival. So, you know, it's building momentum. And as we build an audience, the distributors will realize it's a good bet.
And again, we're here with Guy Mossman.
Mossman.
Cinema photographer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The man of Moss.
Yes, there you go. And the movie is succinctly Speak.
It is Speak, plain and simple. It was directed by Jen Tishira. I co-directed it and shot the film. I'm a cinematographer. And we have an incredible producing team. Josh Gad is one of our exec producers, who's a prolific comedic actor and voice actor and comedian and a great guy. He went through this world. So he is helping us get the word out and has been supporting the film all along, and we're looking to bring on some new partners. Yeah, it's a great team.
This is going to take a whole nother part two with you, but succinctly, how did it happen for you? How did you become a filmmaker?
Yeah, good question. Well, coincidentally, I was a teacher before I did this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was in high school. I taught art, and I joined the Peace Corps toward the end of my teaching stint. Peace Corps was in Paraguay that I was given the opportunity to make a short film with the director of the Peace Corps gave me that opportunity.
That was kind of random.
It was totally random. Yeah. But this great country director there, Diego Hay, who's no longer with us, but forever changed my life when he said, why don't you make the film that you're asking for? Because I was requesting a film for one of my classes. And he was that type of guy. Mm-hmm. And so he found a small budget. We did it. And we spent a year and a half making a 20-minute film together with a group of Paraguayan teenagers again. And I just never looked back. I just fell in love.
Wow. So yeah. Meant to be.
Yeah. Came back, went to journalism school, and have slowly. Yeah.
Thought about it, meditated too much, it might not have happened.
Absolutely. No, it just kind of presented itself. And I'm so lucky. It's the most amazing way. I can't imagine doing anything else. It's amazing. I would like to just close, if I may just say that I hope that the film will really put out there front and center that I mentioned the teachers, but the National Speech and Debate Association is the organization that organizes speech and debate, and they are growing very quickly. And so if there's any interest in this among your listeners, you can find out more at speakdocumentary.com and speechanddebate.org, and we can get you all the information you need. And my name is Guy Mossman.
Guy, it's been so great talking with you and meeting you.
I've had a blast. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival.
Thank you for taking the time to join us in celebrating this nerve-wracking but essential moment in our lives. I'm sure everyone here is filled with so many different emotions.
There she is! Please help me!
Applevi High School has taught us all what it really means to be an eagle. It means to embrace freedom, to spread our wings in whatever path we may choose.
Esther Oyetunji.
Graduates, whether you know the path you are taking next, or whether you are letting the wind take you, just know that every slab we make is still movement. Your path does not need to resemble anyone else's in order for it to be successful. Welcome uncertainty with open arms. Similar to walking into a dark room, it is scary, and sometimes you bump into things you would never expect.
Dad!
But the best opportunities come to those who are willing to face the uncharted. Congratulations, class of 2024, and thank you.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Living till you kill that shade, so I won't listen to the hate parade. I know that I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Some people spit me right out now when they ask me to leave. That's when I stop trying to be the things that I'm not, trying to be like everyone else, trying to fit inside that box. Oh, worse than being